This is The Bloom Pod, and I'm Taylor Onion.
And I'm Melissa Lutz.
Each week, we bring you an interview with an everyday person who is chasing big dreams. I interview the guests for the first part of the show, and then Melissa and I get together and recap the main points together.
With the occasional shenanigan.
Please enjoy this week's guest.
Hey, Tate. What's on your Christmas list this year?
Oh, a little of this, a little of that.
You know what's on mine?
No, what?
Fire and ash candles.
Really?
Yeah. Remember from that podcast that we recorded?
I do remember. This is great because since you were also a guest, it's like a guest supporting a guest within an episode.
It's guestception.
It is guestception.
And the cool thing about the candles is that Ashleisha donates a portion of every purchase to her partner nonprofits, like Liquid Legacy, that support people gaining access to clean water. So you're doing good by making a purchase that also benefits you.
Now, you're telling me that I can buy a Christmas gift for someone and a portion of the money that I pay will go to help those in need?
That is correct. And may I sneak a little recommendation in there that someone could be me.
Ah, I see what's happening here. This is just a ploy for you to get me to buy you a candle.
I like candles.
Who doesn't? And you can find out more by following Fire and Ash Candle on Instagram. Let's do this thing. All right. I feel like I want to sing to you, like from the, I can't even think of what the Drake song is called. But Risa, that's like my,
come on.
That's my inclination to start this thing off. But instead, what I'll do is extend a solid welcome back. I'm fired up to have you on this time as an individual interviewee. Of course, last time we had you earlier in the summer on as part of our N4A panel that we did. This is the first, technically, well, no, I guess I've had my mom on twice. I was going to say you're the first repeat guest, but
hey, if I can follow mom, that's good.
Right.
Mom,
there
always,
you go.
Mom should always win.
She'll agree with that. And she'll appreciate that in the notes that she always sends me after each interview. but you've been doing a ton of stuff, obviously, since we recorded that panel. So let us go ahead and start this thing off by, you know, having you share maybe a little bit more about your background than you did on the panel and getting into what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, you know, as I shared before, Risa Lovelace, I'm currently the sitting assistant athletic director for student athlete development. It's been interesting because 2020 made me realize I've been doing this for 11 years, working in higher education and athletics for 11 years, full time, I should say. You know, went to undergrad and studied sports management, had a blessed opportunity to go to a historical Black college, Hampton University. So go Pirates. And I think that's where I really learned, like, this world sees us differently. And by us, I mean Black people and women very differently. And so I think my professor from undergrad, who I still talk to probably on a quarterly basis, will tell you I was the only student during my time that wrote all of my papers about women in sports. Like, I was only going to cover them. And so, you know, within that program, you have to do internships and practicums and figuring out, like, really, do you want to work in this space? And so had an opportunity to go to a Division III institution that was right around the corner from us. To really kind of fill out what it's like to work in the athletics department full time. And I really enjoyed it. I focused a lot on the community and having our student athletes go out into the community and really trying to build them up from their personal standpoint, right? And then, you know, we all think we go get our master's degree and we're going to get a job right into the field. And that just didn't happen for me. So I stayed connected with some of the mentors that I had gathered during my time as an athlete, plus my master's degree years. And I worked for a financial institution literally from one date until the next date, that the different year, right? The following year. And I had an opportunity to end up at George Mason University, where my mentor was at the time. And again, I think we sometimes forget that the networking piece is where jobs really happen. I never formally applied for the job, went in an interview with the person that was the boss at that time. 2 weeks later, she offered it, right? So, you know, I think a lot of times as younger folks, we think that throw your name into all these places, apply, 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 and we forget the networking piece. We forget to tell people that we're applying for these jobs. We forget to tell people that we still want to work in this field, even if we're not in it yet. And so he really trusted. He was like, I know that you haven't done student athlete development, but I think your personality, being a former student athlete and wanting to see other people succeed, is going to bring us some things that we didn't have. And so I spent 4 years there, really building up their career development, their leadership for student athletes, really making those connections across campus, which at a mid-major you have to do because we don't have the money that some of these other schools have. And then, you know, I think we know when we hit the ceiling in some of these positions, and had an opportunity to go to University of Oregon. I will tell you, still to this day, hardest decision I've ever made in my life. I am from the DC, Maryland area, and going 3,000 miles away, not knowing any person, is very scary. And I remember making the call to accept the job, and I literally sat in my office and probably cried for 2 hours. And like all of my coworkers knew what was happening, so they would come, are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah, just need a moment. And so I spent 4 years there. Again, went to do student athlete development, but walked into a department that was really, at that time, to me, forward thinking. How are we making an inclusive athletic department? And I remember my first kind of assignment outside of my role was, hey, we want to talk about LGBTQ in sports. Like, what can this look like? And we were able to put a panel together for our staff and our students of student athletes who were openly identified in the community and of allies. And I was like, this is fun. This reminds me of undergrad. Like, how can I do this more? And just from there, we continued to build and build and build. Got to the point where we ended up creating the Oregon, which is their diversity, equity, and inclusion arm. And it's been great to kind of see that morph into more than what I probably expected it to do when I was there. And then again, just as the years changed and 2018 hit and just had a lot of family things that were going on, and I just kept saying, God, I need to get closer to home. I don't know what closer to home is going to look like. And he answered the prayer and sent me directly back home. So he sent me back to College Park, Maryland. And now, again, building a new program here. You've had Tim on, who works with me. We got a team that's really trying to do something different here for our students, not only from a student athlete development perspective, but also from a diversity, equity, and inclusion space.
All the things. All the things.
All the things. All the things.
I love that you said, you know, this feels a lot like undergrad when you were working in I think it was at Oregon that you were describing that with the B Oregon stuff specifically. And I think that's something for myself, that's something I feel like I've been trying to replicate. And I feel like for a lot of student athletes who can't figure out this transition, right? Like, oh, I was having a good time. I'm around people who are all my age. I'm with my teammates who obviously have some common interests, at least in the sport we play, probably a little bit beyond that. But I think the kind of sweet spot from a professional standpoint has been when we can replicate those, you know, like I remember undergrad, I was having a great time, right? Like I'm with my teammates, I'm with my other friends. Mm-hmm. Melissa, who helps out with the podcast, this is kind of a cool opportunity for us to connect in things that we've done beyond. But I think that is a space to really consider is how do we find that, right? Like, what do you, and what about that experience? This is what I'll ask you after I've rambled now, but what I'll ask is how do you, like, what about that experience with B Oregon was, you know, reminiscent of your undergrad experience?
I think because it allowed me to bring my full self to work, right? I think as a Black female, well, I'll say Black, female, LGBTQ identified, I am a woman of larger size, right? Like, typically these are strikes, right? Like, people don't hire folks that look like me. People are still trying to figure out how to navigate the world of Black women in work, but also how do we navigate gay people in our society and in work, right? And so Oregon allowed me an opportunity to just be like who I was. When I started at Oregon, I had long hair all the way down my back, you know, for folks who know me and can see me, you know, I have short hair now. My first year there, I was like, okay, it rains a lot here. I'm not really trying to do this. And I cut it off. And I've had people in my life say, you know, hold on to your hair is the last feminine thing about you because I do dress masculine. There, they did not care. Like, it wasn't a thing, right? It was like, okay, Risa is great. She is talented. She's going to make our students of color feel great. She's going to make our LGBTQ students feel like they actually have a safe space. Like, they just allowed me to flourish in who I was and bring my identity into the space and the lens that I can bring to the work, which I think helped some of the students who may look like me or identify like I do feel like they had an advocate who was going to create programs that were reflective of them. And I think we don't always do that, not just in athletics, but in the world. We don't have people who are sitting at tables making decisions that can bring their authentic self to the table, but also the identities that they hold to the table.
Right, which I think is such a, and we've heard the phrase a lot, representation matters. And to be in a space where we have so many student athletes and really students in general coming from all these different backgrounds, I think it's especially important. I had somebody, I'm going to credit this to Huddle Up Training, but specifically, I think it was Spencer Bonahum, who's at American University, was talking about some of the language that we use even in as identifiers, right? So if you are somebody who identifies as heterosexual, you're straight. And then all of the other things that we would use to describe sort of implies that you're out of line, right? Or that you're not, you know, falling in line with what the norm would be, so to speak. And I think that's something that our students, you know, if you're somebody who does fall in that space of you know, the quote unquote normal, right, then you're not thinking about trying to find somebody who is like you, because that generally is what you can find. But for those students who do fall into those other categories, I think that's all you're searching for, right? Because you don't want to be this having these feelings of isolation or having these feelings of like, gosh, I can't say this, or I can't do that, or can't dress this way, or whatever it may be, because you don't want to be, you know, considered other than. So I think that's such a value. The way you started it off to say that you can just show up and be fully yourself, I think that's, I mean, that's what we're all looking for in the world, right?
I mean, that's what we need, right? Yeah. Like, I think about, like, my student athlete experience and being at a historical Black college. Like, I could bring my Black self all I wanted to, but my gay self couldn't really bring all of that. Right? You know, still in the Black community, it is a taboo conversation to have if you have a son or daughter who is gay. And so, like, I couldn't fully bring myself. And, like, I slowly started to tell my teammates about it. And some of them were cool with it. Some of them weren't so cool with it. But at the end of the day, by the time I graduated, everybody was like, oh, that's just Risa, right? Like, we love her no matter who she's dating, whatever she's doing, which we weren't there when I first became a member of the team. And so even to kind of see their progression change said to me that until people know somebody, it's going to be hard for them to change their mindset. And so, again, I don't like to say coming out often. I like to say inviting in, because we are inviting you into the small circle of our space that we trust to hold all of us, you know, in a special space, right? Like, we need that a little bit of extra love than probably some other folks, just because of the battles that we're going to fight every day.
Right. It's an extra vulnerable space to be in, which, back to the power of vulnerability. We know how important that is. This is actually, this is a great segue, because when I was doing my research on you, I think I read the words, I either read diversity or inclusion, both those words combined, about 10 times total throughout your bio when I'm reading through there, which lines up based on what we've just talked about in these first few minutes. But you've had your hands in those initiatives at just about every single stop that you've made along the way. And I think you've shared a little bit about that involvement, but talk to me a little bit about how that has led specifically to what you're doing. And you mentioned during the N4A panel about your website, RBL Theory. I think it was about to drop when we did that. But so talk to me about the connections there, what prompted that, you know, tell me about that journey.
Yeah, and I'll give credit to, it's funny, I just talked to my former supervisor at Oregon last Friday. We were catching up, and she had asked me a similar question, like, how did you decide that now was the time to launch RBL Theory? And I said to her, when I first got to Oregon, you wanted me to speak in front of people. And I was like, why is this lady asking me to get up in front of these people and either tell a story or introduce people? I was like, I didn't want to do that. Like, that was not me. I was never comfortable talking in front of folks. And it was something that she felt I needed to work on. And so that kind of prompted me into spaces that, again, I never thought I'd see myself. And so just kind of through some of the programming we were doing there with the launch of Be Oregon, some other folks started to recognize and say, hey, can we have Risa come sit on this panel? Like, we think that the work that y'all are doing there is important. We want to hear from her. And so that got me to NCAA panel. That got me to speaking at Nike headquarters, which is still like mind-blowing to me that myself and a student athlete at the time went up to Oregon, to Portland, the headquarters of Nike, to talk to students about like what we were doing so that they could potentially reflect it back at their high schools. Right. And so kind of sitting there thinking about like, oh, this is actually a platform I can have. I can share not only my story and the work that I've been able to do in athletic departments, but actually like just the importance of why we need to come together and think about inclusion across the board. And not just from a race and LGBTQ perspective, I'm also a person who is spiritual, right? Like, I wear a WWJD bracelet every day. And like, people are like, how can you have all of these identities and they be combined in one person? I'm like, easy, like that's just how God made me, right? And so, you know, sitting through COVID and just kind of watching what's happened over the last 9 months, I kept saying to myself, I'm still being asked to come in virtually with different schools and have these conversations and lead discussions. And, you know, I kept saying, you know, for years, I should launch a platform. This can turn into something more. And being able to sit at home and not be commuting to work, and it just gave me the confidence and the time to say, okay, you can build this right now. Like, take that time that you would be doing X, Y, and Z otherwise, and really spend it on yourself. And so that's what I did. When we talked initially, I had launched a website. Since then, contracted with somebody else to make it much better than what I had done. And she did a really great job. Had somebody come up with a logo. And so now it's like a true business. Like, I am an LLC. There is a corporation behind this. Now I will say I'm still a person of one, doing all of my social media, doing all of my presentations. But it's taken me into spaces just in the last 2 months where I'm now having consultation meetings with organizations that aren't just in athletics, right? Like, that is the power of what I would say Oregon has given me, is they have given me the confidence that I have been missing, you know, since my undergrad days, to be able to have these conversations. And it's been fun, like, and to watch some of these athletic departments and other organizations say, like, we're actually truly committed to this. We don't want you to just come in and give us a one-time workshop. Like, we want you to actually come back and help us look at climate assessments, help us look at the data, help us actually build a strategic plan that's not just diversity sitting on its edge by itself, but that is actually incorporated back into our mission, vision, and objectives of our businesses.
I love it. Not just checking the box, but you know, going beyond that. So my next question, and as I'm looking at your jacket that you got on right now with the new logo on there, RBL Theory, I know R and L obviously are initials. I'm assuming the B is the middle name too.
Yes, it is.
And where does the theory, like, how did you come up with the full name?
To be honest, this is going to be so out of left field. So when we first create our Twitter profiles, we have to figure out who we want to be. And I think for a minute, it was my handle name was like at musical theory or musical therapy or something like that. And I was like, because music is like where I found my joy. And then I was like, I can't be known like this once I become a true professional. So what are we going to change this to? And you're right, the B stands for my middle name, and I'm not going to say it because we're just going to leave that where that is.
I won't ask.
But so, yeah, it is my initials in theory, right? Like, when you look at the definition of what theory is, it's the basis of who you are and the practices, right? And so, for me, everything that I'm going to tell you is coming through my lens. You can continue to go do your own homework, and I implore people to hear me and then go do their own homework. And come up with their practices and their policies that they need in their own minds and in their own spaces. So that's literally how it came up. It just was like, what is my Twitter handle back when Twitter first came out? And then it just kind of evolved into who I am and thinking about it from my lens and my space.
Now we got to go back and talk about music, because I feel the exact same way. So
it's therapy, man. It is true therapy sometimes.
Right. So what is it? Maybe I want to ask, what does that mean to you, or how do you find your joy in music? Because I think people that don't, you know, identify or don't use, people that don't identify with music really closely, they don't get it. It's just like, okay, you listen to music, wonderful. But for me, I'm like, no, I listen to music. Like, there's right. like, there's yeah. power behind that statement.
And there are different playlists depending on the mood, right? And I am very serious about my playlists. And I have playlists on Spotify and iTunes. Yes, that is me. There's music flowing everywhere. So for me, it really is, I felt like as a young person, trying to figure out who I was, like I could turn to music and it would be that saving grace, right? Whether it be gospel music, I'm a huge fan of country music, which I know a lot of people are like, yes, but why, right? Like, but country music, and for most of what I listen to, is really depressing and slow, and but it speaks to me, and I'm like, that's where I found my joy, and it's helped me through my problems. Like, you can look at the lyrics and you're like, oh, you may be going through the same thing I'm going through, but you have a voice and you can sing and I can't, right? I'll hum along with you. But for me, it's like got me through so many things, especially on those days when you're alone, right? Like I said, I was alone for 4 years, like living 3,000 miles away from everybody. So my highs, I listen to, you know, some good upbeat music. I will also admit that I am a Gleek and I still watch Glee and will still play Glee music yes. all day long. And so if you look at my top music for 2020, as all of the music platforms tell you, Glee is still my number one, followed by country music.
Okay.
It's just where it is.
Now I have to know, what is your favorite Glee? Like, what was the top Glee song?
Okay, so again, here we go. This is probably the depressing piece of 2020 for me. We all know that Naya Rivera passed. Earlier yes. this year, and she was really the reason I watched the show.
She's unbelievable.
So the remake she did on Taylor Swift's Mine, you would not know that that is the same song. Like, she slowed that song down so much, and it was so beautiful. I kept saying, this is going to be my wedding song one day. Like, that is my number one song. It has actually been played, I'm scared to admit that it's been played probably 400 times on my iTunes count. But that's how much I love that song.
Right. If it brings you joy, go ahead and play it 500 times. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
I like, so you mentioned, you know, if you're like a musician or an artist can sing a song and maybe you identify that with that, like, hey, I'm going through this too. But I also think music is so up to interpretation of the listener. So I can listen to a song. We can both listen to a song mm-hmm. and I might think that it's about one thing and you listen to it and you're like, no, actually I think it's more about this, which is so cool because it's coming, you know, from the same person, and they leave it up to you to relate to it in a way that you want to.
And I think it just, for me, it feeds the soul, right? Like, I can listen to music while I'm working and it gives me a different joy. I also can listen to music while I'm working out, and that's a different type of joy, or I would say rage, because I really don't like to work out and it's only raging against the machine, right? But I don't like silence. I don't do well in silence. My girlfriend will say, do you always have to have something playing? The answer is yes, right? And it's not just playing, it's loud, because I think sometimes I'm hard of hearing, but that's probably because I always have headphones in. But I think that whatever that thing that you can hold on to and you can grab, find it and hold it and keep it with you, whether that's writing, whether that's playing an instrument, whether it's music, whatever that thing is, because at the end of the day, that's the thing that's going to save some of these folks out here.
Yeah, that's the artistic expression. I'm going to set myself up here. Artistic expression is a way that we can all bloom.
There she go. I knew one was coming.
This is so, and I set it up that way because I want to move into next. I want to ask what is one experience, or if you feel like maybe it was a series of experiences, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, where most folks land on this. You know, is it one thing? Is it several things? But what are the experiences that have helped you bloom into the person that you are today?
Probably a series of events, I would say. But I would give credit to my mother. She has always lifted me up, like giving me the space to just kind of be who I was. I always like to reminisce on me even just coming out. Like, it wasn't a shock where I'm like, I thought this would be a shock to the world, but apparently it was not. And she handled it so well, especially in a time where, like, you know, I was 19 when I came out. That was more than 15 years ago. And, you know, at that point, parents were kicking their kids out of their homes. Like, they weren't accepting. And I know it still happens today. And I know we still have a long fight to go. But the fact that I was able to have community in the house that I grew up in, I could come home during college and not be looked at like, you know, an alien, right? And then I would say just also like watching my friends kind of progress in the lifestyle too. So I wasn't alone now, and I had community again from, you know, my friends that I went to high school with. And then I think just even finding myself through this work, not just the athletic work, but the inclusion work that I'm now doing, is like everything that has, I would say those are the series that have led me to where I am. I think about being an athlete and trying to figure out who I was through that. You know, I played basketball in high school and then was a collegiate bowler. Two totally different identities. But at the end of the day, being my authentic self, having my family support, and fighting for justice have always been my personal values. And I think watching myself, I think about this now as you ask that question, and trying to think about my life at 35, like those, I think, show up every day in who I am. And I think, and I hope that the students that I work with can say the same. And I hope that the industry leaders that I work with can say the same, right? Is that when you see me, you know what you're going to get, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And I wish that more people were like that, because I think that would stop some of the things that we're currently seeing in our society.
Yep, I agree with you 100%. I kind of feel like I should just mic drop after that, but I got more stuff for you. So
fine, let's keep going.
Right. So the next thing that I want to ask, and maybe this is something that happened in that series of events that you just explained, but the, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
Again, I think it's interesting. It goes back to my mentor from undergrad. I just swear sometimes he knows what to say to push my buttons and make me mad, and then I go and do the thing, right? So again, just the transition I made, again, to me, this was just like that huge leap for me, was moving to Oregon. And I had went in his office and I said, so they offered me the job. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. His response back was, you do not have a girlfriend. You do not have debt. If you don't get on that plane and go, I'm never talking to you again. And I was like, well, what do you mean you're never going to talk to me again? Who says that to somebody, right? Like, again, he knew what buttons to push. And I literally went and made the phone call 10 minutes after talking to him. But he was right. Like, I had the world at my fingertips, and if I were going to sit here and stay and continue to be unhappy, like, that wasn't going to be great for anybody, right? Especially myself. And so to think about, again, just how that 10-minute conversation changed the trajectory of my life. Like, I sometimes wonder what would have happened if I stayed in that job. Would I be where I am today? Not just in title or status, but would I have started this business? Would I have found the confidence of my undergrad years to go out there and shake the world up, right? I don't know that would be. I would probably be a shadow of myself. So for me, I always think about that moment, and I tell people who look at me now as a mentor, and I say, like, and I literally said this to a young lady yesterday who said, what is a piece of advice you have for me as a Black female in athletics? And I said, if you're single and you can move, because we don't get the opportunities that a lot of other people get. Like, nobody is knocking on our door to say, come work with me. They're not doing that. They're pausing and saying, well, she has the experience, but this person over here is better, right? And it's because I'm comfortable with that person. They may look like me, et cetera. And so I said to her, like, it's time to spread our wings. And I know it's scary, but you got to just jump. And know that you can always come back home. Like, I think that's always the thing, too, is, like, especially knowing her, like, her family's gonna always be there for her. And at the end of the day, she has me. She has other people that will help her stay on her feet. Like, I'm not going to tell you to fly if I know you're going to fail. Right, like I'm just not that person. And so I think about how I can continue to help the younger generation that's coming behind me kind of find their wings and spread them and enjoy the world, because there's not a lot of joy, at least not happening these days, right? There's not a lot of joy happening. So when we can find it, let's find it.
Right, not unless you're listening to Glee, right?
right, yeah.
I think that's something that this generation, and it'll be interesting to see the further that the millennial generation gets along. It's going to be interesting to see what impact that has on Gen Z and what's coming up next, because I think right now we're seeing this, I have an opportunity, but I'm not sure about it. Maybe it's far away. Maybe it's not the exact right job, but it feels in your mind when you're making that decision very, very permanent. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it doesn't have to be permanent. When you look back 20 years down the road, you look back at your whole experience, you might only spend 1 or 2 years at that stop.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
People are still setting this like, oh, you got to be at a place for 4 years. Oh, you, especially in higher education, right? You got to see your class graduate. Oh, you got to be at a place for 10 or 20. Like, that's not where people are, especially not after COVID, and watching some of these organizations move to strictly online working, right? Like, the younger folks that are coming behind us are going to push our generation further than we thought we could go, which is in turn going to push some people out into retirement or into spaces that they're still comfortable with, but the rest of the world is going to keep moving forward.
Right. I wish we did more. I wish, or and maybe I just don't know where it is, but I was going to say, I wish there's more work in the world, or I wish that we did more to talk about how these generations like merge together. And I'm sure it's somebody's, after this will be like, actually, look at this person's work. But we talk, I mean, in student athlete development, we talk about maybe the communication differences and things like that. But I think it's so, we spend so much time being on like quote unquote one side or the other, right? Like as a millennial, you're either, the job hopper, the young kid. And then if you're on what came before Gen X, I think it was before that, the baby boomers and whatever, you're either on one side or another of a generation. Now Gen Z's coming up, and then eventually we'll, be making whatever assumptions and characteristics about that generation. But there's no, it's so difficult to find the common ground. Like for millennials and for Gen Z, some of us are going through the same kind of, generational events at the same time or in the same way. Same thing for Gen X, the stuff that, I'm thinking about maybe, I'm thinking about some of like 9/11 and some of those other spaces where the older part of the millennial generation and the younger part of Gen X would have seen some crossover there in what they're going through. And we just don't focus on, we spend so much time focusing on what makes us different instead of focusing on, the places that we're similar and the places where we can find community.
Well, and I will add to that, like people, and I guess I'm still technically a millennial, but I'm 35, right? And so I'm working with people who are in their 20s, right? And like they even have to push me sometimes, like the whole TikTok thing. Still don't understand it, not gonna download it, just not where I'm at. But I understand it, and I understand that that is where our current student athlete population is, and they like to make these videos and all of those things. And so as long as I understand it, great. But I'm not gonna tell them like, no, we're not gonna switch to that platform because I don't get it. And I think that's a lot of what I saw when I entered into this space. It was like, Instagram, Twitter, we don't need those pages because I'm not there for it. And I was like, but that's where our students are. So like, I think as I continue to get older, I would hope that I'm hiring people or working with people who will push me to say like, no, this is the new fad. We need it because that's where our students live. And I think that's not what we're seeing oftentimes just across the world is like, we don't necessarily want to listen to the younger people because what do they know? But I'm like, they actually know a lot. And even like these high school students now, especially the ones that are freshmen, right? Like my niece is a freshman and she's doing online learning. Do you think by the time she gets to college, she's actually going to want to sit in a classroom after going through this experience? So like even learning is going to look different. Are we in higher education ready to know what that different looks like? And are some of these professors going to be ready to fully shift to online learning? And I hope the answer is yes. Yeah, I'm a person who needs to be in a classroom. I need to be able to see my professor, ask a question. But I think for some of our students, they may fully want to stay online. And what does that look like moving forward? And I hope it's a great thing and I hope we can embrace it. Because again, that's going to keep costs down in some ways and we can spend money doing other things that are actually giving students experiences where we couldn't give them before.
Right. That jumping off point, the beginning of change is always super scary because you're at this kind of crossroads of what we've done has worked and and kind of change and be able to adapt to a new space.
Well, and it always comes at a moment of tragedy, right? And I don't know if you attended the Women Leaders in College Sports virtual convention.
I sure did.
But Brené Brown had jumped on and she said, COVID is this generation's 9/11. And when she said that, I was like, yep, sure is, because I was in high school when 9/11 happened and I can't tell you what life looked like before that. Right. I was a sophomore in high school when it happened. Can't tell you what it looked like before that, but I can tell you what life looked like after it. And I think these students and these younger folks aren't going to remember what life looked like before that. And so again, are we all willing to adapt and change to the new normal? And I know people are tired of hearing that, but like, we're not going back. And if we try to go back, we're going to be behind. And right. So are people willing to make the changes that are necessary? To see society continue to move forward and for us to live in a safe world.
Yeah, I think about, I mean, even if they came out tomorrow and said, hey, there's no new cases, it's completely, you know, the whole thing is gone. Like, I'm still using hand sanitizer because that's what I've been doing the last 10 months.
I might still be wearing a mask.
You know? Right, like, right. Exactly. All right, so this is the final piece. Now, and I'm going to ask you because last week's guest said that they preferred the previous name that I was using, which was the quick peel. So this is essentially like a lightning round. So quick peel is one option. Melissa, the sidekick, really wants it to be called the slap chop.
Nope, I'm going with the quick peel.
Okay, this is two for one now. Yeah. I love it. Okay, so this is the quick peel round.
I think I'm ready.
Yes, there's five total questions, four of them, this or that, and then the last one is a fill in the blank.
Okay.
Okay, first one, coffee or tea?
Tea.
Okay.
So that took a while because I've been drinking coffee lately because I've been tired, but coffee is probably my go-to.
I've been switching back and forth quite a bit just to, you know, shake up the system, confuse myself a little bit.
Yes.
All right, second question, favorite book?
Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes.
Ooh, that's on my list, but I haven't read it yet.
So I am a person who has a hard time saying no, right?
Right.
And I know her book says Year of Yes, but it's yes to things that I want to do, right? So I'm learning that. I'm not sitting in all of these meetings anymore because what is it doing besides looking at people on Zoom, right? I'm saying yes to the things that I know are important and that need my voice and attention at this time. So we can't be everywhere and doing everything.
Right. Yeah, that is for sure. I got like six books on my
list. You gotta read it.
I gotta get to it.
I think I read that book in less than 48 hours. Like, that, I could not put it down.
See, now you've encouraged me to go and get on it right away. All right, third question, favorite day of the week?
Probably Thursday. I'll say Thursday in COVID because typically Fridays are days that I set aside just strictly for student meetings. So Thursday is like my last full day and what I consider like real work because Friday is fun with the students.
Right.
And I think in the position I sit in now, prior to COVID, I didn't have much student interaction because I'm being asked to sit in all of these different meetings across the department, which is great, but I was missing that student interaction. So I would say Thursday is like my last full day of work. And so it's like, okay, we're here. We've made it, right? So that's what I'd say.
On to the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, question number four. What is the last song that you listen to?
Oh, I don't think I've listened to a song today yet because I've been listening to podcasts all day. Wait, my Spotify is up on my computer, so let's look.
Okay.
The last song that was played is, let's not play it.
That'd be a nice surprise.
Dan and Shay.
Ooh.
Because that's how I like my life. I should probably go to bed, which is also probably the theme of my life lately. I don't think I've fallen asleep before midnight, which is unusual for me.
Gosh, yeah, you got to get that rest. Okay, last one. This is the fill in the blank. Onions are blank.
Great, and they belong on a lot of things.
I love it. There's been a different answer from every single person, ranging from somebody, I think last week it was, they belong on everything. Somebody just straight up was like, amazing. And then most people are like, how am I supposed to answer this? Is it like caramelized fries?
Right. So when you asked, I was like, what do I like onions on? Pretty much everything. They go on a burger. They go with chicken. They help cook things.
Right.
You can use them for everything. So onions are great.
I had one of my friend's dads we must have been in college still. He said that onions belong on all cylindrical foods. And right after he said that, the rest of us were like, what about bananas or popsicles? And he's like, all right. I meant like hot dogs and brats. Okay.
I mean, if you want to put it on a corn dog, I guess. Maybe.
Right.
I've never had a corn dog.
Really?
There's something about frying a hot dog in batter that doesn't appeal to me. I've watched people do this. I'd just rather it be on a bun.
Okay, because to me, now, and I like both. I like hot dogs and I like corn. I'm going to add that to my list for next week, hot dog or corn dog.
Yes.
Right? But to me, the corn dog is just like a bougier version of the hot dog. Like the bun is just squished tighter too. The actual hot dog. It's a hot dog and a stick.
not gonna get me on that one. It's always gonna be on the bun for me.
All right, that's fair. I think that's a good note to go out on. So thank you so much for joining me this week. Loved having you back on. It was great to catch up and hear all the wonderful things you're doing with RBL Theory.
I appreciate it. We got a lot of work to do in this world, and I'm glad for people like you who are putting folks on your podcast that are actually being change agents, because we need to know that there are people out there, especially in a time where it feels like you are all alone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just trying to help the world bloom one guest at a time. All right. We'll see you next time. Stay tuned for the recap of this episode with my sidekick, Melissa Lutz. Risa Lovelace.
I like that.
That's
a cool name.
It is a fantastic name, and it makes me want to sing. Risa, do you love me? You know what I should have said is, Risa, are you blooming?
Ooh.
I don't know what
a missed opportunity.
I know. I don't know what the next words would be after that. We can brainstorm on that, maybe come back to it.
Do some Googling as we like to do while we're recording.
That's exactly right. You know what? Before we get into our recap, what I would like to say is that I listened to the Armchair Expert Holiday Spectacular today. And amazing. I mean, they had live performances, they had storytelling, they had gift opening on air. I think it's something we should explore.
What?
Perhaps for 2021.
Taylor, if you're implying that you would like me to perform a musical number, I'm here for it. Let me just warm up my vocalizer.
I am definitely open.
Okay.
Jeez, are you ready?
Hey, Charlie.
Charlie?
That's from something. I don't know what, though.
Candy Mountain?
Mm.
Candy Mountain.
There's the live music I was looking for.
Do you remember that, though? That, like, old YouTube video?
Do I ever? Candy Mountain?
Charlie.
And do you remember, what was the other one we liked? Salad Fingers.
Yes, I loved Salad Fingers. And there was, I think it was the same creator who made it, but the guy who was, it was a stick figure, and he was like, my spoon's too big. My spoon's too big. And then a banana comes out, and he goes, I am a banana.
Is that the end of the
story? And that's it. That's it.
It
was so random. You know, or the end of the world.
I'm thinking about the types of videos that we were watching, you know, as the internet developed in real time, and the kind of stuff that we thought was hilarious, and then thinking about the stuff that kids are into these days on TikTok with their dance crazes, etc. Mm-hmm. And I just can't help but think what a different life we were living.
They were simpler times.
They were simpler times. I was just going to say something. Oh, I know what it was. As we were sitting here, I just noticed that there's a textbook on my childhood desk that's called, mm-hmm. I'm going to see if you remember this. Hey Whipple, squeeze this.
Yeah, that was from our advertising 400 class.
Yeah, from content creation, which was our concrete jungle, our Jeep advertising.
Yes, that was my favorite class I took in college.
Me too, actually. That was one of the more creative endeavors that I got to be a part of. The rest of it, you know, it was like history of advertising and, you know, intro public relations, which is all useful stuff, but the
we got to flex our creative muscles in advertising 400.
Yeah, it was like a long-awaited flex of those muscles for us, mm-hmm. because like, we just,
this is why we got into this.
Yeah, and we then got to come home every day after class and or practice and just come up with taglines to our heart's desire.
It was great.
What else?
Time.
You know what else was great?
What?
I'll tell you, the interview that I did with Risa Lovelace.
Wow, what a smooth transition, Taylor.
I know. We really teed that up. I'm pleased with that, with how that went.
I can take no credit. That was all you. She's super great. I've said this about the majority of our guests, but maybe you just have a way of bringing people on that you know I would like. But I like her, and I want to be her friend.
What if that was all that the recaps were? That every single time you just were like, I was like, so what'd you think? And you were like, oh, what a great person. Can I be their friend? And then it was like, doo 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 doo. Thanks for joining us.
That'd be sad. I would like to think I bring more to the podcast than that, but now I'm second guessing it, Taylor.
No, you definitely do. You definitely do. And even if it's just for my own personal gain, because this is a great way for us to connect on almost a weekly basis.
It is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lovely standing date we have. Truly. Okay, but back to Risa.
Yeah, back to Risa. She is fantastic. She is, as I mentioned, I'll say that truly my mom is the first. Actually, technically you are the first repeat guest because you were on the first episode and then on every episode since.
I'm not a guest. It's like when you go to your best friend's house and you're like, can I get a water? And they're like, it's in the fridge. You're not a guest here. That's how I feel here.
Just go get it. Yeah. Then technically my mom, because she did the best of season one episode. Mm-hmm. And then Risa is also a repeat bloomer, because she was on our N4A panel episode and touched a little bit on RBL theory and what kind of her plan was with that in that panel episode, but she didn't get all the way into it. But to the extent that we did this time, because I think the website, it hadn't even launched when we did that over the summer. So that was cool.
It was still in its infant phases.
Twas but a twinkle in her eye.
Yes.
I don't know.
A twinkle in her eye and probably journals of scribbles and drafts of websites and stuff like that.
And perhaps an actual website that just was not published for the public yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into starting a business like that. I think it's super cool that she, puts herself out there in the way that she does and is so authentic and honest about, like, all the things that make her unique and that society can sometimes be judgmental of. And she's just like, this is who I am, and I love that I am this person, and how do we make other people with their own differences feel included and loved and accepted?
Yeah, that was the word. I'm so glad you said authenticity, because that is what rang true over and over and over again in my head as I was talking to her. In fact, one of the notes that I have that I wanted to talk about specifically says, I love how much her, and I think this is true of a lot of people that we have talked to, but specifically with Risa, I love how much her personal journey and the experiences that she has had in life tie specifically into the work that she does today, both at Maryland and in what she's doing with RBL theory. I think it's those are kind of what's the word I want to use? Inextricable.
I'm gonna sure. That sounds like a nice fancy word.
I'm
not gonna question it.
Well, I'm gonna look it up here in a minute, but I'm thinking of a word. And of course, the listeners can't see me, but you can see I've got my hands weaved together. And I'm thinking that, like, that's the word that I want to articulate. Maybe I'll just say woven.
I see.
Yeah. Her life experiences are woven into her everyday life.
Her work.
Yeah. And especially in her work.
Yeah. I think it's super cool because, like, we all have our passions, and a lot of us are able to marry those into our careers. Mm-hmm. But like, her identity, it's not just something she's passionate about. Like, she's using who she is authentically as a human to help others, to inspire others, to help organizations, to carry that on and inspire others. Like, what she's doing has such a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that she knows that. That's something that, like, I think a lot of people miss in the work that they do, is like the effect that they truly have on others and how that impact can have a ripple effect on other people. So I really hope that she's someone, strikes me as someone who would take that time, but like to reflect on just how empowering and impactful the work she's doing is. And like, it's so cool that she's like consulting and outside of even college athletics, like she's
right
in so many industries, and people see the value of what she brings and then are harnessing that and sharing that with other people in their companies. So I just feel like she is making an impact probably far and beyond what she even realizes.
That skill too. Oh, and I want to tell you before I get into that, I did look up inextricable. And it is an adjective, and it means impossible to disentangle or separate. So it is what I wanted to say.
Good job, Tay. Good word. I'm air fiving you.
Win for Taylor.
Yay.
That skill to take the experience, let's say as an example, to take an experience that you've had in a college athletic space and tell that story, essentially regurgitate that story and articulate it in a way that helps somebody who's outside of athletics, let's say a grocery store, because that keeps coming up in these recaps. Somebody who works.
Does it?
Well, you know, I feel like grocery store conferences, you know, that's come up a couple of times.
It's been a bit since we talked about grocery stores, so you made it seem like it was like an every week occurrence.
I've been sneaking in tidbits about grocery stores every single episode since then. No,
just
but
whispering
that,
produce words into the
right
microphone.
Clean up on aisle 4. Okay, that was the first one that came to my head. So to be able to articulate your experiences in one field in a way that somebody in a completely different field not only understands, but can also, you know, relate to and apply to their own situation, I think it's such an underrated skill. And I think that's one of, you know, her greatest strengths, certainly, as she can reflect on her own experiences and then be able to, you know, share those and relate to others and help people bloom, if you will.
Yeah. And like, as humans, we are all flawed in our own ways, and we all have our own insecurities that like make us feel different from others, right? Like, we don't always express those. A lot of us keep them inside. So I think it's cool. Like, I think her message probably resonates with everyone in some way. We all have things that we're like, I don't know if I should share this about myself. This makes me feel different. This makes me feel like an outsider. And her like honesty and her message, I feel like could literally resonate with every person in the world, mm-hmm. to some degree.
I was thinking about the quote. So, and we talked, I think we touched briefly on, it's been a while. I wrote down my notes, of course, but it's been a while since I listened back to the episode. But she and I touched briefly on representation. And I was talking about, you know, if you are in the quote unquote norm, it doesn't strike you any kind of way to see different people in maybe positions of power, because we've so often seen people who look like you and me who are, mm-hmm. in those positions. So I'm not thinking about like, oh, I hope I can find someone who looks like me at this school or organization or whatever. And so to have, you know, people who are different and who represent different people, I think is such a valuable piece of, you know, being able to, what's the word I'm looking for now? Foster inclusive environments. Because the more those voices are heard, you know, the kind of easier it is for more and more people to understand. As you were just saying that, the quote that came to my mind is the RBG. I don't even know if she said it or if it was someone else, but the quote that's at the very beginning, I think, of her documentary. And she starts off by saying, you know, we don't ask our brethren for any handouts. We simply ask that they take their foot off our neck. And I think that's such an interesting quote and such an interesting concept to consider when we're talking about representation in general, because so many, specifically white people, are concerned about, you know, if we expand equality and equity, that, well, I'm going to lose my privilege. Like, no, that's not what we're saying. This isn't like an arms race where one group is trying to get more privilege than the other. This is, we're just asking for equitable circumstances. So just take your foot off our necks and then we can all live hopefully in peace.
I think there's something important about what you said just then, though, is like the fear of losing our privilege just goes to show that like there is inequality and maybe people should lose their privilege. Right? Like,
right.
Why should there be privilege?
Right.
I'm air quoting. You can't see me, but like that, the word privilege speaks to that, the existence of inequality in our society. Mm-hmm. So like the fear of losing privilege just goes to show like where there are opportunities that we have more access to that other people that are so deserving and qualified for do not.
Mm-hmm.
That is privilege.
Right. I think it's important.
So we should lose it.
Right. It's important to note too, and this is something we touched in the Huddle Up trainings, I think I told you about that I had the opportunity to recently go through. We were talking about different forms of privilege. So a lot of times when we're talking, you know, there's been a ton of focus on white privilege lately, but there's also privilege if you are straight or heterosexual. There's also privilege if you are a Christian versus someone who might be Muslim or, you know, another kind of religion that's not quote unquote the norm in America. If you have a college education versus if you didn't do anything past high school, all these different pieces of privilege. And it sounds, you know, I think people get caught up on privilege and thinking that it was a handout. You know what I mean? But that's not, it's not necessarily the case, but it just means that you have more if I show up to a job interview as someone who has a master's degree and is pursuing a PhD versus somebody who only has their bachelor's, I'm going to have an educational privilege because I've had the opportunity to do more schooling and more, you know, more higher education opportunities. And I think that it's not to say that I didn't work hard. It's not to say that I didn't face challenges in those educational opportunities, but I have had the privilege to pursue them, whereas somebody else may not have. So I think it's important to, and we've talked about, you know, privilege and what it means to kind of each of us and all that before, but it's just, it comes up in so many different ways, I think, in the conversations that we're having, both with guests and with ourselves and in our lives.
Yeah. And I think that there's a guilt that comes, like, you and I are both very privileged. Like, it's mm-hmm. apparent we are white people in society. And like, we were born into, like, you know, relatively stable, normal, privileged lives. Mm-hmm. And I think what's important, because I find myself getting caught in this trap of like feeling guilty about it when I'm seeing the struggles that other people go through and the like things that they have to fight for that I was just like had. I think it's more important for people in a position of privilege to use that privilege as a gift that we can pass on to other people. Like, I like the term, I've heard people call it a birth lottery, right? Like, we won a birth lottery. We did. There's no reason behind it. We just were born into better circumstances than other people in the world. And mm-hmm. so it is now our responsibility to create opportunities for people in need and to help those to gain the opportunities that we had just been granted at birth. And I think this is where like so many people fall short, is like the guilt gets them and then they don't want to address it. And they're just like, no, I'm not privileged. Like, they either ignore it or I don't know. We all have our own reactions to situations in life. But I think the best thing that we can do is to bring awareness to the reality of people's situations and then use what we have to shed light on it, to help those people in need, to have opportunities to better themselves.
I can't think of what the podcast title was, but Brené Brown, within the last year, certainly, maybe within the last couple of months, said that shame is not an effective social justice tool. And I think shame is not an effective tool for anything. So as like what you just said is so important, and you know what, you've just inspired me, because I'm thinking about New Year's resolution. It's gonna be
your resolution can be to create a revolutionary.
That's right. It's, you know, it's a couple days away, and I think I want one of my focuses to be no more guilt in 2021, because what does guilt do? If I feel guilty, then I'm not doing anything. So as soon as that feeling of guilt comes in any shape or form, I am going to focus on retraining my brain from guilt to, what's the word I want to use? Almost like amplifying or use of privilege to help someone who is less. It's like, put your privilege to work.
Growth opportunity.
Yeah, growth opportunities. Put your privilege to work. That's how I'm going to phrase it.
I would like for you to help me to apply that theory to a current situation that caused me some guilt. I'm having a couple friends over for Christmas tomorrow who are also orphaned. And sorry, this is going to come out after Christmas, but they're also orphaned and they're in my quarantine circle. So we're like, let's spend Christmas together. So I went and did some shopping, got us some snacks. I did bust open the Sour Patch Kids that I bought, and I did eat the whole bag. Having a little guilt, because that's not a healthy choice. And also that was meant for my guests. How can we turn this into a growth opportunity, Taylor?
I want to quickly clarify that when you say orphaned, you mean that you stayed in Colorado away from your families because of the pandemic. No, that's okay. I'm just making sure that I know who your audience is that you stole these Sour Patch Kids from.
Oh, yeah. Let me paint a more accurate picture. We work together and we're not able to go home to see our families. So that is why I use the term orphaned, which now seems insensitive. And I apologize.
You know what? No guilt. Put your privilege to work. But on the note of, you set me up really well there. On the note of the Sour Patch Kids, I would say that you're right. It's not the healthiest decision. I would also tell you that it's still 2020 and we've been through a lot this year. So I think you should let it go. Just as Elsa said. And just don't tell your friends maybe that you had those before because they won't know because you ate them all.
I also have Swedish fish and some peanut butter M&Ms for them, but I just realized that my growth opportunity from eating the Sour Patch Kids was around my waistline.
Not growth of mindset, but growth of waistline.
Yes. Growth nonetheless.
Right. Another note that I had in here. And I have a couple things that I have to share with you. But one is that I did not know that Risa was a fellow Gleek.
I love that.
I know. I haven't watched it. I never finished it. I haven't watched the show in such a long time.
I haven't either. I think that I watched it in college with you guys. And then I lost track after graduation.
Yep. Same for me.
What happens to everybody?
I have no idea. I think Rachel went to New York. I should have asked Risa this while we were on the call, but well.
That's what people tuned in for, a summary of the final season of Glee.
Right. Only spoiler alerts.
Except that it's been out for a while now, so it's not really a spoiler alert.
True. Well, yeah, if you haven't watched it by now, then it's just, you know, that's your own fault.
That's your fault.
Yeah. Or something nicer because it's the holiday season. You should watch Glee if you want to.
Yes, maybe that's your New Year's revolution.
Maybe it is your New Year's revolution. I have two more things to say that are unrelated to the interview, but are related to things that have come up since I have been back at my homestead in the small metropolis of Industry, Illinois.
Say it again.
Industry. The first.
Does anyone else think it's so cute that she puts the emphasis on industry? I think it's adorable.
Oh, thank you so much. The first thing I want to share is that my mom got my dad to listen to some of the episodes. I don't know if like he was riding with her in the car, I think is what was happening.
So he's trapped.
well, I was gonna
he
say
had no choice.
I don't think he knows how to seek it out and listen to it himself. But she got him on and he texted me. He said, "Hey, I listened to your podcast. You did a good job." So what I wanted to say though was at dinner last night, it came up and I said that I had a couple of podcasts that I was looking forward to catching up on in the next few days that I hadn't had the opportunity to listen to because we have been, you know, all over the place this Christmas season. So I was looking forward to some downtime and, you know, being off work, etc. Anyway, I said that and he's like, "What is a podcast?" And I'm like, "Dad, you literally texted me the other day about my podcast. You know what it is." And he was like, "Well, I just don't understand the name. Like, why is it called a podcast?" And I said, I'm not sure where the pod comes in. Maybe like ear pods, iTunes, maybe it was that kind of a situation. It's where we landed. But he wants to know why podcasts and whatever happened to just calling them presentations.
Huh. Feels very formal.
Does, you know, and
people expect to learn more from what I have to say than I usually provide.
the Bloom pod comes off the tongue a little bit nicer than the Bloom presentation.
Yeah. I'm Googling it.
Why is it called a podcast? Oh, I can't wait. Okay, when you get that, tell me. But the second story that I'm going to share is mom's recap email, which I think came through earlier today. I actually had post-it notes that she left for me. She went out to run some errands, and I had post-it notes left on the counter that had questions that she had about Tuesday's episode with Alexander Martin. And then she sent us both an email, which says some really wonderful things. One thing in particular I wanted to share. Did you find why it's a podcast?
Yeah, because it's an iPod broadcast.
Aha!
It's a mashup of the words.
So we were onto something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You were. I can't take credit. You figured that out.
Well, if you had been there, I have full confidence that you would have been on the same thought train as me.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, what I wanted to share with her, I mean, with what? Wait a minute. How do I want to say this? What I want to share with you and our listeners.
I'm sure.
About what she said. First of all, so much information. She loved the CBA, and then she started giving us also some interview tips.
I thought of a new what CBA could stand for as Ooh. I was listening to the podcast back, and I was like, wow, it could be anything. It could be anything.
I was like, what's it gonna be?
It could be anything.
Anything. CBA. and then she shared with us some interview tips and what she would say for certain questions based on the CBA plan. But then something that I thought was so cool that she goes into, and I think is so timely, because again, this is where we're just a couple days before the new year. She says, one of the alums used to say that my overnight success took 20 years. She said, I love that quote. And then she said, thoughts on comparing your life to someone else's. Comparison is the thief of joy. She got that in quotes. She didn't make that up, of course. And she says, that's one of my favorite quotes. And if you want to be unhappy, go ahead and assume that everyone is ahead of you in life in some way. Marriage, kids, jobs, money, whatever it is. She said, God puts gifts in other people so that you could enjoy their talents, not be jealous of them. And you have gifts that you were given so people could enjoy your talents, just like in track or swimming or race car driving, where we need to stay in our lane. To whom much is given, much is expected. And then she goes in to say that she's, you know, thankful that we are friends and doing the podcast together, etc. Which I am.
Me too.
Yeah, me three. I am also glad, I was gonna say, because not only does it give us a chance to catch up every single week, but then it also gives us a chance to hear from my mother every single week about the notes that she has and questions that she has for the guests that we've had on.
She has really good feedback for us. I always enjoy reading her emails or watching her Snapchats that she sends. She's a very insightful gal.
I think it is safe to say that she is our number one fan. And
oh,
I can also confidently say that if she was the only one listening, that I would still want to make the show every week, because she's getting insights that, you know, she can, stuff that maybe we've missed from the guest or questions that we didn't think of or have or whatever. So it just, there's a lot of neat perspectives, I think, coming from this.
I think this podcast and your mother are both providing growth opportunities for us.
To bloom?
To bloom.
To bloom. Oh man, what else did you have, buddy? Anything? Those were the notes I had.
Oh, I wanted to talk about your guys' appreciation for music. Because I really enjoyed listening to that part of you guys just like gush over what music means to you and how it can like serve whatever emotion you're feeling, and there's a song for everything, and we're all able to, you know, draw different meanings and emotions from songs. And I we don't always do this, but like hearing about the passions outside of work that our guests have, like things that drive them, things that like make them tick. So I really enjoyed hearing that she's such a music enthusiast, and I don't know, it's fun hearing you guys connect on that.
Yeah, that was super cool, especially because I think she mentioned, because I asked how she got the name for RBL theory, and it used to be, you know, like music is therapy, or musical theory, I think is what she said, or something like that. And I'm like, my ears perked up, like, musical therapy?
I love it.
Let's talk also about it.
You were referencing RBG earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like moments ago. Yes. And I was like, oh my gosh, does she have the same? I thought we were still talking about Risa. And so I was like, does she have the same initials as Ruth Bader Ginsburg? And then I realized you're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But I love that she calls it's RBL, right? RBL mm-hmm. theory.
Yeah, they're both RBs.
Like, I know, that's so cool. And I feel like she's totally someone who's like walking in similar footsteps of RBG and like mm-hmm. Bringing awareness to issues that women and people who are LGBTQ and people of color, like, that they face every day. And that's something that, like, I don't know, I just see parallels in the way that they're living their lives. So I think it's really cool that she named her platform and her website RBL.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. That's the last notes I have. And this is, I would like to point out, the last episode of 2020. And
what? No!
Of this year. It's December 29th.
Oh, I thought you meant of the season. I got so sad.
No. Man, we gotta get a calendar, communicate more or something.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. No, this is, I'm like, I don't think there's not enough time for us to put out another episode in the next 2 days.
I got it. I'm back on track. I had a moment.
You're with me now.
Some judgment.
Well, you've actually, this sets it up well, because I was going to say that next week will be our break week, but we will be back on January.
What? No!
You can't do that every time I have an announcement.
I think that'd be a fun thing for us, no?
It could be a new segment. Melissa interjects at
inappropriate moments.
Melissa dissents. So like I said, next week will be a break week, and then we will be back on January 12th, Tuesday, January 12th, and we have a fabulous, oh yes, I'm going to get there. We have a fabulous, okay. We have a fabulous new guest who is chatting about a fabulous new topic that is not something we've ever discussed on the Bloom Pod. So I'm very excited for that episode coming up.
What a teaser, Taylor. Now I am beyond curious.
Well, I hope I had the same effect on our listeners. Now,
same.
Do you want to explain to everyone why you had such a large gasp when I said January 12th?
Because I realize we will have both just turned 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. This is
what?
This is our
How
last.
How did we get here, Taylor?
I am uncertain. But we're here. And
when
we're...
I first met you 12 years ago, we were just gallivanting through life as 18-year-old children.
We were 18-year-old children. Look how far we've come. Look how far we've bloomed.
Wow. I can't wait to celebrate our 30th birthdays via Zoom, recording this podcast. I'm going to come with, maybe I'll have a little like confetti gun or something that I shoot in the air.
Oh, please do. I'm going to get one too. I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea. But yes, you heard it correctly, folks. This is our last episode, not only of 2020, but this is our last episode as in
our 20s.
Ba-ba-da-ba.
Oh, man.
Wow. That's a 2020. 20s.
That's a 20-ception.
That's a 20-ception. So yes, next episode, January 12th, Melissa and I will both be fresh off 30th birthdays.
We'll be wiser, more seasoned.
That's right. We'll be wiser and more seasoned.
Actually, I don't want to set those expectations. I take it back.
We get wiser and more seasoned every day. So it's a true statement.
That's fair. I just don't want people to think suddenly I'm going to have these like revolutionary ideas.
Well, I think we have those revolutionary ideas.
I think we're changing. I think we're always changing.
I think people can change.
I think we stay the same. I think we're always who we are.
That is a bridesmaid's bit for you lovers of Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
All right. You want to sign us off, buddy?
I mean, I'm having so much fun. I don't, but I guess we should.
I know.
All right. Well, that's the way the onion peels.
It sure is. And we'll see you not next week. Oops, I almost messed that up. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, don't forget to like, rate, review on Apple Podcasts. We love hearing from you. And exciting news, you can now follow and set up notifications to get notified on your phone every time a new Bloom Pod episode comes out on Spotify. Happy New Year.
Hey, that's pretty neat.
And Spotify, if you're listening and you want to sponsor us, until next time, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Keep blooming.
We'll see you in 2021.
We'll see you in 2021.
And good day.